Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, y'all, what's happening? That's Chuck D and M talking about fighting the power, which we have to do all of the time, my peoples. Yo, let me put it to you like this. I'm Citizen Payne. I'm K-Sun. This is Son Friend. And my boys are Byron Saunders, legendary historian, and Wayne, the legendary newsman, are here with me. We haven't been around the last couple of weeks, been busy doing some things, getting in some good trouble. And, yeah, so we missed the Super Bowl. That was like the blackest Super Bowl you ever seen, right? A lot of people were throwing up, probably throwing stuff at the TV. I wonder how many TVs were actually broken during that halftime show. Lordy, lordy, was they probably upset. I heard Ted Nugent was losing his mind and things like that. I'm loving it. I love it. The blacker, the bigger, the bolder, better. That's what I'm talking about. You know, at this age, I am still learning about history, about the history of the United States and the despicable things that they have done and kept from us as a people, and the lengths to which they have gone to perpetuate white supremacy, to keep black people as slaves. And it's a very interesting thing. It constantly is changing the dynamic, I find, as our progress in this country, being brought over here in chains, slaves, although there are Africans that were traveling back and forth here a long time ago, which is something that you never learn, the history before America, the history of black people before slavery. Yes, we had a history. And so as I go through the, you know, you go through the hundreds of years that we've been captive in this country, slavery to Jim Crow to second-class citizenship and the like, and you see that the dynamic in how we are oppressed and kept down changes. Sometimes it's overt, as it was in those days. Clear, made simple, which in my perspective I like a lot better. I like to have my racists right out front where I could see them, as opposed to the plight, eventual racism that came in probably around the New Deal, Reconstruction, semi-Reconstruction, still initiated the years of terrorism, but the polite racism of the Reagans and people like that, and then back to the overt racism of Donald Trump, and really began in George Bush's era, which is why I the Willie Horton ad ran by his father, and things perpetuated by Karl Rove and Dick Cheney, because George Bush, W. Bush was the worst president before Trump took the title from him and made George look like, boy, we really like that guy, our favorite high school or college classmate. Excuse me. And so I say that to say that our march towards freedom, towards liberation, has, you know, we have to ever change it. This is chess. This is chess, Negroes, not checkers. And so when I see the various movements, you know, people join our movement, people claim to be supportive of us, people claim to be allies of black people, the term progressive has kind of replaced liberal. You know, when we were younger, me and the two gentlemen that I host this show with, when we were younger, it was called liberalism. You know, we're liberal in your social values, social morals. And that liberalism has become progressivism. And I take the same perspective that Malcolm takes towards those liberals back in the day. You got to watch them. The ones that always want to claim to be your ally, but they want to be out front, and they want to tell you that maybe your brother is not doing as good as he could because he's not as progressive as you. Some of the people that have been fighting for generations before we came along that were out there putting their lives on the line, that now perhaps some of them aren't progressive enough. Wow. Because I thought walking around in the skin I walked in this white supremacist perpetuating company was progressive by my very presence, was liberal by my very presence, really was radical by my very presence. At one time, I heard a guy who was an elected official that I met over the past couple of months, and we were talking about the campaign that my cousin is in, and some people have labeled him for the rich. People don't know any better. And he said, I remember when the Paines were considered radical, because my father and my uncle were probably talking about rights for black people, radical thought in a racist country that chose to make us less than human. I had an audition, and I was listening to some old things on YouTube, Wayne, old slave recordings of people that were recorded maybe in the 30s of their life as slaves, the last two remaining people who were brought over on the slave ship. And so, you know, our quest and our tactics and our strategy changes as this chess game and all of these levers and devices and these things are used to perpetuate our oppression. And as we can see now, that they will even use some of our own to attack some of our standard bearers. And I'm not talking about people who have been entrusted by us in our community, who have gone astray, who've got drunk with power. Certainly they need to be replaced, but there are those of our community, black people, who fought the good fight, who continued the fight, who fought when nobody else was there. You know, a lot of these other groups that are all militant now and they want to speak up, where were they when black people were catching hell? Those that could blend in survival. I understand you were surviving. You did what you had to do. But see, we couldn't blend in. We couldn't camouflage ourselves. And when we found communities of our own, they came over and tried to destroy them, our harmony. So if people come about and they want to talk about individuals in our ethnic group who might not be progressive enough in their eyes or point to us and say we're not doing the right things, I say bullshit, because you have the luxury of blending in for your survival. And though even those times, did you even speak up? Did you even talk to those other? We don't need black people to talk to white people or racists. We need those in their group to talk to your people and try to change their perspective, as opposed to coming out later and telling us that certain members of our community aren't progressive enough. The nerve, the gall, the unmitigated rancor. That's some Shakespeare for your ass. I'm going to bring the fellas in here. It's just that I see through the bullshit. And we need to be more transaction, I think, as black people. We need not to be, we need not to assume that we are free in this country. We need not to assume that we have the same rights. We do, but they come with a caveat. So this is why I was so pissed off at someone like Bernie Sanders. Because you got a considerable amount of young African-American people supporting you. Considerable amount of support all across the board. But when it came time for us all to come together, as Democrats often have a problem, which is why I think that African-Americans, we need to be a little bit more transactional about our vote, because I see even within the Democratic Party that we, when it was time to come together and Bernie was not happy. And if we remember during that time, Hillary, I don't think he was really gung-ho in supporting her. And many of the supporters of Bernie sat on their hands and decided not to vote. And so who catches the most hell when that happens? The people in the most dire situations, which happen to be black people for the most part. You know, you've heard us say, and you've heard the saying that when America catches a cold, black people catch pneumonia. So we don't have bullets to waste. We don't have that luxury. We only get one shot. Eminem realized it. That's what he put in his song. We only get one shot. So when Bernie says, oh, we'll get him next time, we lost, we get Donald Trump instead of Hillary. And what happens? Well, I don't know if this was a direct cause of it, but I know that a number of black people lost their lives during those 4 years. I know people lost their lives in Charlottesville, white and black. So that whole bullshit about progressive and we could do this, that's a luxury that we as a people don't have. We got one shot. And when you get one shot, you got to make it count. You can't afford to be wasting it. So when I hear these jackasses talk about progressivism and they don't, you know, they kind of paint individuals with a broad stroke. I visited some website that I'm not going to talk about, and they're supposed to be progressive. I can imagine. I'm pretty sure that if I looked at all the individuals behind this organization, I think that the majority probably would not look like me. But they kind of paint everybody that chooses to do things or maybe take money that they don't approve of. You know, in the hood, people take money and they get money from individuals that they might not be completely aligned with. What do? They take that money back to the hood and flip it and use it for their own purposes. It's a chess game. We have people that have seniority. There's something called seniority in the Congress. And so when we get some of our people that finally get into seniority, somehow they get challenged. Somehow they get primaried. Don't you think that there is a larger plan afoot as opposed to just somebody rousing you up and saying, what are they doing for you? We got to play chess. Don't play that shit in the Drop Squad. Drop Squad is a mythical group. We're a filmmaking company, but we came together with all one perspective about things, that what was really going on in this country. That's why we made the type of art that we made. And it just pisses me off that we have all these people walking around want to claim shit when they ain't never been through nothing. Everybody want to reap the benefits of being cool like black people. They don't want to walk through the hell that we walk through on a daily basis. So unless they're willing to do that, unless they're going to be a real ally and not try to be the boss and tell us who we have and lead young people astray, and the young ones need to learn your history, know what's really going on. Let me bring the fellas in here and talk about it a little bit. I know I said I was tired, Humpy, but, you know, I get a little amped up when I start thinking about it. What's happening? Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. What say you, brother?
Well, it's nice that your energy gets a boost here. See, this is group therapy, Eric. Me, you, and
sure is.
Everybody else who joins us. It's fine because you get a chance to sit in on the conversations that we as African Americans can have amongst ourselves about an assessment of what's going on both nationally and internationally. And that's a very important perspective because the minimum amount of voices from our own community that are on TV and have a platform like this must speak out, must give our perspective, because we're not to be marginalized just because of what's going on over in the Ukraine. Cannot do that. Because at the point at which you may recall several weeks ago, you know, I said, this is an old story. And it's very much so still an old story. It's like we're rehashing the 2016 election. And we all know now that there were Russian assets all throughout the Republican Party, not just let alone the administration of the Orange Man. But they were Russian assets, and now they're being really, because if I told you that the conspiracy was wrapped up in not just the overthrow of the government, but it happened long before, because our geopolitical immigration policies have let into our country, immigrants from Ukraine. There's a Russian mafia in Brooklyn. And if you don't know it, Sheepshead Bay, where I lived in the area off of Coney Island Drive. And, you know, it's like, I'm like, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, why is it that when I'm walking down the street to go shopping in Bogdanovich, I got nothing but Jewish stores, and then even those are Russian, Ukrainian Jews, and walking down, you know, the other main Kingsland Highway and walking into a community of Ukrainian shop owners. And then there's a Russian mafia that's even, I told you, link these stories, though, because a couple of weeks ago there was a story in the newspaper about an Alabama town where the sheriff and the police, the local constabulary there, were handing out tickets by actually draining the community by way of ticketing and arresting for minor things, and nobody was stopping it. But guess where they were from as a community? Yes, the Ukraine. So you see immigration policy on one hand, we've been throwing shade up, talking about MS-13 and people of color coming in, while right now you have so many Russian assets, both in our Congress, in our Senate, in local politics, and integrating into a faction like it's the United Soviet Socialist Republic. So what's going on over there in Ukraine right now is what's trying to establish a 1621. Don't get it confused. I told you the minute that man let those people in, the Russians, into the Oval Office, you should have been waving your flag then. But no, you were looking for MS-13. You had your eyes on the border trying to build a wall to stop some Mexicans coming in. In the meantime, you have your infrastructure. I sure hope that our military is not putting all of its focus on this, because in the meantime, we got these truckers coming to D.C., and I'm telling you, I am livid. Once again, do I have to go through this? I want them that if one truck blocks 495, that's our interstate, impound him, arrest him, freeze his assets, get him in jail. Country, though, this Ukrainian thing, because the Democrats are going to grow some balls with this one, Eric. They're either going to step up and be the tell that Russian Putin, that who's really nothing but a thug. You know, you got to, what you do to a thug is you punch him in his nose. And if you punch him hard enough, he'll sit his ass back down and he go back to his corner where he's supposed to be. Now, prove it to yourself, President Biden. You're going to do put all these restrictions on them, freeze their assets, do it. But in the meantime, you've proven to me as an African-American that if you can do it to the white people in Russia, you can do it to these yahoos that tried to scale our walls and determine to overthrow our country, because that's the same kind of thug. Arrest right. The Trump, arrest all of the 147 congresspersons because they are, and senators, because you know what, Eric? They all got Russian money. Follow the money. Follow the yellow brick road. You think I'm playing? Follow the money.
Well, I was going to say about how I was having a discussion with someone today about how the thinking, well, we're talking about how people are pretty much cattle, the average person, the 99%. There's a large percentage of people who just are cattle. They can be led anywhere. They can be told anything. They can be led to believe. And this person I was talking to was like, you know, people have a belief system by people. They said, you can tell people are a study. She saw a study and said that usually people who don't believe in evolution and believe in creationism end up being racist and prejudiced. And the thinking behind it was that these are people who will not accept scientific evidence that refutes what they know to be a comfort zone or whatever, or a belief system that they've established for themselves, and will not accept anything that would upset that, even though it may be provable in fact in science, even though it may be based in fact, that certain people who choose to believe that and reject science are more apt to be racist. And it makes sense. I kind of chimed in. I said, yeah, because they all wouldn't believe that everybody, all life comes from Africa, you know. And this was a Caucasian person. They kind of chuckled. But it's interesting that they can put their mind, and so it makes sense to me that these people can put their mind and develop a mindset for anything, because then you could justify your actions, right? Because then they could justify their actions. And so if you're able to convince a group of people, like the United States has always had, the world has always had individuals who are easily convinced because they want to believe certain things, then it makes sense that now they're able to, if you look at Fox and these other conservative networks, it makes sense that they're able to try to also turn the corner and try to get people to actually sympathize with certain actions by Putin. Sympathize with Russia. And those of us that are baby boomers and older know from way back in the day that Russia has always been our enemy, and that's why we're quiet as it's kept, and maybe not so quiet. That's why we're pissed off at Cuba to this day, because Castro cozied up to Khrushchev.
Yeah.
And these same individuals we talk about, these right-wing people that are now turning and making somehow Putin seem like, you know, the good guy or whatever, or Trump said he was genius or whatever crazy stuff, they're trying to make that okay, and they're changing the history. So it makes sense that these are the same individuals who will not allow history to be taught in the classes because it makes some of them uncomfortable. These are individuals that don't want their children to be taught about the crimes that their ancestors have committed because they plan on continuing to perpetuate those crimes. Here's Wayne Gilman, the newsman, coming. What do you think, Wayne?
Hey, I concur 1,000%. I mean, I was listening a little bit to what Byron was saying, and I know Byron had predicted about a month ago that this wouldn't come to be, but it seems like we're on the precipice of some sort of warfare. But it's just unfortunate that, again, it goes back to what is happening with social media, the lack of fact-checking, and we don't have millennials on the right side of the media. The Tucker Carlsons and the Bill O'Reillys and the Jeanine Pirros are not people of a younger generation. They're people who know and live through what we've lived through and should know better, but they have their own personal agenda. When that yellow man or orange man got on the mic yesterday and was applauding what Putin was doing and how the United States government should annex Mexico the way he's taking over Ukraine, parts of Ukraine, I just said to myself, how freaking un-American. You know, I'm old enough now to remember that both parties would rally together in support of anyone that threatened democracy, you know? In a way, when I look back at what happened some years ago when Obama was going through his challenge in that particular region and Putin got away with it, maybe, and again, it's hard to say, did Obama do the right thing by ducking? I just think that, you know, there's enough of the playbook now that has been established that Vladimir Putin wants to go out in a lot of years of his life as having brought back some semblance of what he fought for when it was the Soviet Union. And NATO has gotten stronger, and we need to make sure that that still exists, and there should be some way with all the things that we're doing to take this man out. He's a modern-day Hitler. And I mean, I don't espouse somebody's death, but this guy is tyrannical, and so is Trump, you know.
Oh, you talk about
and,
people, okay.
And I, you know, the thing is that we have to wade through this, and I'm hoping from Byron's lips to God's ears that the Democrats will rise above this and prevail, because the Republican Party looks very disjointed right now. dispirited in so many different ways, because you have one faction that supports what Donald Trump says, no matter what comes out of his stinking mouth, could be feces, and they'll support it. And then you have another generation of Republican people who embrace basically what I said before, that you rally the troops together, one United States in times of crisis like this. And I don't know.
Republicans seem to be in the minority.
There's just too much divisiveness. I'm sorry.
Those Republicans seem to be in a minority to me. Those ones you said that
yeah.
would rally and come together, they don't seem to be. There seem to be a very small Lincoln Republicans or whatever, very small number, and they're not
right.
speaking up. And so, less than
but
what
this
I'm
may
about.
Turn against them. If Biden succeeds with this, it will turn against them, and that's
it
the game
is.
That they're playing.
If we
it's
can make it
turning against them,
right.
To look at what's really going on politically, because you're right. If Biden is, he already is. The sanctions
yeah.
are in place. And remember this. Yesterday, three men were convicted of a hate crime so
oh,
heinous
yeah.
that it will set the precedent long after their jury judgment. And do you know in this post particular case, I didn't know this until last night. I heard it, and I was like, whoa. Of the 12 men and women, one black guy. Do you know who was the foreman? The black guy. Now, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And you must take
yeah.
that victory, because in the end, when we are dealing with, you're right, with Putin being put back into his box, which can easily be done, the threat of the Armageddon will be put on his plate by our generals to say to him point blank, you do this, we will blow you off the map.
Well,
and you can do it how many times yeah. over? No, listen, guys. Listen, let me tell you something.
I think it'll be a mutual disaster thing.
Of course it will be mutual. But why did they pull their ships off of the coast of the United States? Armageddon was surrounding them. Okay, that's what made Khrushchev blink. Go
right.
back into the history books, and
right.
you do the same thing to us. This thug was not even as close to being as powerful as Khrushchev and Gorbachev were.
Oh yeah,
he had a thug that has $230 billion assets. Now, think about this: the orange guy signs on to a guy that can get him out of debt. You see, you got to follow the money, guys. This ain't about no nuclear weapons. This is all about money. You cut off his $230 billion, you shut down Trump because his brand, like, I went back, guys, I went back into the history of all the things that I've been keeping on, the Russian involvement. And I pulled up a source, and I was like, oh, my God, it's staring us right in our face of who are these guys who became Russian assets. And they all had money put into their pockets so they could own allegiance and to an individual who is nothing more than a puppet himself. And that's Trump. And think about it. From Cleveland, 2016, where they changed their platform to allow Ukrainian information into the GOP platform, they all got laundered money from these Russian oligarchs. Now, as I started off with my opening commentary, if I told you this was the deal, would you believe me? You'd probably say, Byron, you need psychiatric intervention.
But I'd say anything is possible, brother.
Look at the connected dots, gentlemen. Look at the connected dots.
Yeah,
right.
They're
right.
so prevalent that it is staring us in the face, and is like, even yesterday on MSNBC, the prosecutor, former prosecutor who's now in Michigan, can't think of her name, drew up a probable cause for criminal charges based solely on what we know in public information.
Criminal
right,
charges against
right.
you.
So the
yeah.
Justice Department has all of this that it has. I don't care what's going on with the prosecuting, the district attorneys up in New York. Forget about that. That's all shade. It's still on point, just like the one in Atlanta, Georgia. You have to go inside. The root rot of our political system is not just in a one-term president. It is in the Koch brothers. It is in the
Senate. Let me jump in here real quick, Byron. Let me jump in here real quick, brother. But it's the chess game, right, that we're talking about, because you mentioned briefly, briefly the decision yesterday in Ahmaud Arbery's case, the federal case. And the mother said something very interesting, right, if you remember. She said that the prosecuting attorney for the case actually stood up and said, forget about the tears or pay no attention to the tears of the family, and which was very – why would a prosecuting attorney say that, trying to prosecute these individuals, unless there was some some sort of accomplice, unless they were complicit? I don't understand why they would say that, where they're trying to get a conviction of these individuals, and also, too, the fact that the Justice Department was willing to settle with these guys with a federal accept their plea deal, which would have meant they would have gone to federal prison. Easier than regular general prison, right? And if they were still alive once they got out, then they would have to go to the regular prison. But just the fact, and that was the Arbery said, no, we want them to be tried in federal court so they could be found guilty, I guess, so they would go to the hard time in the other in the real prison as opposed to the federal prison. But it was just interesting that that was the tactic that was being taken by the Department of Justice to kind of not give them, go after these individuals with the full extent of the law, give them the harshest penalty possible. There's always some trick that these devils have to try and let each other off the hook some way or some shape or form. And you never know who's who. That's what I'm talking about, blending in. Because these individuals blend in like they're down with the cause of righteousness and all this bullshit. And then at a certain time, at the right time, they reveal their real plan to back off.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes it's even us, because I'm wondering what Mr. Bragg is doing over there in New York, Wayne, where he's deciding that maybe they don't want to go after Trump.
Well, I think he's blowing with the political wind, and I'm not sure, basically, if he even knows what he wants to do, because he was, you know, everybody is up in arms about bail reform to a certain extent, and I understand why there was a need for reform.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is that he painted a picture that basically in this uncivilized city that we're living in now with all that's going on, that we have to, you know, basically rein in some of those misfits, you know, whether they are willfully doing things or they're psychologically compromised.
Who are we talking about?
I'm talking about why Bragg has been back and forth. He's, you know, in one sense,
are you talking about the police misfits, or are you talking about the criminals?
I'm talking about the people who are on both sides. They're misfits in the police department that I'm hoping that they will put an end. I mean, right now they've been going through a lot, you know, of whiplash themselves, because it's not even as if they have control of what's going on in some of these, you know, outlying communities where the criminals, the hardened criminals live, you know. It's like a perfect storm. It seems like a confluence of events, the homelessness, the pandemic, the frustration, the ongoing problems with black youth against black youth. All these things have converged, and unfortunately, it's landed in the lap of the second black mayor for the city of New York, because the last mayor didn't know what the expletive deleted to do with the problem, and he had his mind set on higher office and other things, and he should not be elected anywhere, I know they gerrymandered his district so they could create a position for him in Congress.
Get back to Bragg for me. Bragg, to me, it seems that he doesn't seem to be able to read the temperature, though, because I understand all of those elements in wanting to revisit bail reform and maybe not necessarily do away with it. But reading the temperature of the city and what was going on, it seems that he's not able to read that. and certainly with these guys backing off of the prosecution of Trump, seems that he's, again, not able to read the temperature. Maybe there's, and clearly always in situations like this, where the public, where people, we are people that don't know the entire story, but certainly with the crime that's going on there, you would might want to rethink the whole bail reform issue.
Right.
Or tweak it where it serves the community a lot better, meaning that, you know, wrong individuals aren't unnecessarily locked up in jail like a Khalif Browder, the brother who got caught up in that system. But tweak it. But don't come out until you're going to go away with it in the middle of a crime wave, man. You got to come with some solutions. And then your second strike is you're not going to go after Trump. So, you know, doesn't seem to be starting.
That I don't understand. It's almost like as if somebody gave him some money.
Yeah,
you know.
He does not seem to be starting off on the right 2 feet. And I can imagine if I were over there, I might rethink my vote for him. I'm certainly rethinking the good feelings I had in being a supporter from afar. I'm wondering what the hell is going on in his mind.
Well, I think initially he's been sabotaged by his own press and 'cause he came out as being somebody sensitive, someone who was in the hood, who had been victimized. A lot of how these young people, same story with Eric Adams.
Exactly.
But the deal is he never had to walk the beat. He never had to go out and arrest people. And I'm not saying that that makes Eric better.
But you understand,
Eric has
I give you an understanding as a police officer. You understand that there are people out there that, hey, we're part of the oppressed group. We all get that. But nobody is more about having law and order than people in that oppressed group that have to deal with the criminal element because of the issues of society causing the people and certain individuals to turn on itself. And then you'll have the nefarious individuals who are not well-meaning individuals who would take advantage of that. You have to recognize that, which is why I think Eric Adams was a good choice, because while recognizing that we as a people have had all these things put upon us, there are some bad ones out there. And it's okay to say we're going to get rid of the bad ones in our community because our community is catching the most hell by the actions of these bad apples. So we're going to make sure that we're safe in the hood, but we're going to do it the right way. I think that's the message to me that I'm getting from Eric Adams. The message that it's going to be coming from Bragg is a little bit different.
Well, Bragg has a completely different agenda. I mean, and he put himself before Al Sharpton's weekly rally up at the House of Justice a few weeks ago to clarify himself. But it seems like with every news cycle, there's like a little nuance or a slight change. It's like he's playing to the press. And this is something that I was talking about the other day in a little show that I do that, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have a black press voice the way we did. Not to go back and
he was complaining about that,
pat
too,
myself
wasn't he?
In the back. Huh?
I said he was complaining about that last week, too, wasn't
it? Exactly. And that's it. Because, you know, the thing is that whatever the press at large says, you know, a lot of people tend to swallow that, and you have to read between the lines. I know when I hear certain things said by certain people, basically what to think. I've worked with some of these people covering stories, you know, and I see the you know, the latent racism or the way they'll turn around and twist a thing to make it look a certain way. Next thing you know, and a lot of them are not even doing the freaking work. They'll just go there and parrot what somebody else said and say, oh, that's a story. You know,
if it's not the story. If the Post is saying
that, and that's
I know
the
it's
problem.
Bullshit. If I see it in the Post that's criticizing them, I know they're full of shit. Now, if I see it in the Daily News, I'm and he's very right about it, even though the woman that was doing the story on NBC, she seemed to be siding with the side of the white press, a little bit of overtone. But, you know, that's what we expect in America now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, the burden now, to me, is for these people to prove that they're not racist. And that's I hate to carry that around with me.
And let me tell you, man, it's a hard road to walk because, you know, having worked in and you were talking at the top of the show about the liberal element out there, there are a lot of people who present themselves as being understanding and sensitive and all that, and liberal, but deep down inside, they still have their own latent agendas as to how they want certain things to go. And you hear things, whether it's said in jest or whether it's said to sound humorous or whatever, but I always try to analyze what he or she really meant by certain things that they had said. And that's it. I mean, when Eric went up to Albany to meet with the members of the state legislature, you know, the reporting back from what I was able to glean off the air, what little I read over the internet, seemed like bail reform was a non-issue. There was no way that they're going to be discussing having to reform that, but they got to do something. You can't just put bodies on the subways and not just people from law enforcement alone, but people who are sensitive enough to interact with the homeless, you know, and go through the expense. You know, he was talking about trying to keep the budget a certain way. Well, now you're expending money that was not expended before to anesthetize a problem that could have been solved a long time ago. You know, it's like today they decided now that they're going to experiment with 3 subway stations to put up barriers, and they're already complaining about the cost, but how many more lives have to be lost by somebody stupidly pushing someone in front of a train? You know, you go to other countries like China and Japan. All that stuff is part of their infrastructure. You know, you don't hear about if somebody's being pushed, they're certainly going through a great deal to push them in front of a train. You know, you don't have the problems that we have, but it's a different culture over there, too. Some of the things that you know, I know the average American wouldn't tolerate, these people have a certain discipline and understanding and respect, you know, that's part of their ancestry tradition, you know, that they have respect for their elders, you know, and they've gotten things to a certain extent that they really are a force to be reckoned with. You know, we're talking about Putin and what's going on in Russia. I can tell you right now, the government in China owns the Caribbean, you know, where they are supporting all the major islands in terms of development, in terms of loans. You know, you may have people in the front who may look like us, but it's the Chinese government that's supporting half these things. And if you travel throughout the Caribbean extensively, you'll see where their presence is being felt now.
Africa too.
Yeah, exactly. So,
they've been laying that groundwork since my uncle was alive because, you know, he was considered Mr. Africa. And I remember that a young lady, he said, a woman came to him to want to speak with him about the issues of Israel. A woman reached out to him through somebody else, and they said, this person wants to come and speak with you about your stance on Israel and yada, 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 this and that. And the woman that comes to see him is a young Asian woman who was married to an Israeli real estate guy in California. And she wanted to talk to, I guess she was involved in issues of Israel, but she also had family members that were involved in just beginning businesses in Africa. She was an Asian woman. And they were at that point, I guess she wanted to make some sort of connection with my uncle to talk about some of those issues as well. And I know this because he told me about it because they threw a fundraiser for him in California, in Beverly Hills, and I went and met him, and actually dropped him off at the airport. And he broke it down to me what was going on, you know, when I come in there and see this older Israeli guy who was a real estate guy married to a younger Asian woman, and her family members were there, and they were doing business in Africa, you know. And I guess they wanted to make a relationship with Mr. Africa. So that was the issue there. But, yeah, and this was 2010 maybe. So they've been
– You can imagine what's happened in the last 10 years or 15 years.
Yeah, so they've been there for quite a while, you know, getting within the infrastructure. developing infrastructure. You know, when you go into these developing nations, the real big money is made if you come in and say, we're going to be the electric company. We're going to be the phone company. That's where, you know, infrastructure contracts in nation building, building nations. So, you know, of course they've been over there, and the African countries have formed some sort of partnership, but we know that unfortunately, just like human nature, really, just like over here, in certain circumstances, those partnerships are not necessarily to benefit the masses of people. They're there to benefit, you know, the few at the top. And it might be they're building roads and infrastructure, but from what I understand, the workers over there, they got their own, they live separate from the Africans. They got their own community. And they treat the people there, the indigenous people, they treat them with not the greatest amount of respect. So once again, there we are back at square one as people of color being treated disrespectfully by people that want to come and make money off of us, want to use us as just financial assets. And so if we ever get to the point where we understand our own value and not want to be such a non-monolithic. Sometimes it's good to be a monolithic group. Sometimes it's good to move as a team, not as alone, to quote the great Chuck D. And that is the problem, I suppose, sometimes with freedom. That people are free to do some shit that don't make no sense. You know? And if we look at now, you know, the potential for a moving to the next subject, for a potential for the first African-American woman to be on the Supreme Court, and just wondering how the Republicans are going to respond or how long that they're going to take as they try to deny the woman from getting on the bench. I don't know what you guys think about that, but I definitely see some resistance coming. We got a lot of static coming from somewhere, but that's
yeah, I hope it's not my line. I you know, I'm on a landline, but I'm hearing it, and I'm hearing it on my end. I don't know.
Yeah, I can hear it too. But what do you guys think
about? Yeah, maybe I should call back, or what do you
No,
what
no,
you
no,
say?
That's fine, that's fine. What do you guys think about the potential that we have, and do we think that there's going to be any, how much resistance that the next black, the first black woman nominated for the Supreme Court? Do you think she's going to be a smooth sailing in, or what do we think, gentlemen? Input.
Well, the odds on favorite of the three, because the qualifications of all three, the top ones that we in D.C. are hearing with respect to any of them, they are all very more qualified than the last three that have been put into the Supreme Court. Not a question of none.
More qualified than the
Solis. Well, they have had experience as a judge in a circuit court. They've been clerks. They've had the opportunity to be understand the dynamics of the public as an advocate, having done public lawyering. You know, I mean, you have to have someone who is not, unfortunately, part of the Ivy League corridor. And two of them are not from the Ivy League corridor.
But why do you say that?
Primarily, well, because, I mean, you look at all the Supreme Court judges who have been named. Look where they've come from. Look where the Heritage Foundation is recommending. Look at where the other conservative groups have put into place judges who are now serving, and whites, the last three, have come in with conservative agendas. And even now we know that Clarence Thomas's wife can be considered a co-conspirator to the overthrow of our government with her respect to supporting financially the day event itself, compromising a Supreme Court judge. That's serious, gentlemen. That's not just hearsay. That's a serious accusation. And therefore, coming in with a African-American woman who will indeed bring a paradigm shift from the dynamics of having white men dictate to women of color women's rights without any woman of color having any say. You know, it's like finally a spokesperson has to be a representation of the community for which she is being called from to represent the dynamics in the Supreme Court, because its sway right now is so conservative, it's not even a Supreme Court in balance, judicial balance, not just the fact that it's Democrats versus conservatives or versus Republican initiatives. I'm just talking about judicial balance. That's the way justice is supposed to work. Unfortunately, we don't have it, and we're even seeing it metastasize in a case in which an Asian judge cries for the victim, the cop woman who killed this young man because she thought she had a taser in her head. Kind of judicial qualifications does that individual have for bringing judicial balance?
Yeah,
you cry for the
perp? She got away with a lot right there. You know,
oh my God.
It's awful, because I checked with two friends of mine who are retired police officers. There's a different feel when you hold a taser in your hand as opposed to a regular revolver. Just the weight alone is radically different. How do you make that mistake? You know?
Mistake or not, it's been done, and now we see the imbalance of justice. Because remember, I always tell you this. I've been saying this for a while. Justice is 90% legal. The 10% of it that has to convince us is the perception of justice actually working and being fair. If optically we don't see the fairness in judicial pronouncements, then it's obvious that it's not working on behalf of us.
Right.
Yes.
It's because the hand that's meeting out the justice happens to have a certain perspective and a persuasion, right? So to me, that's the issue that you have there. And also, to me, there had been a precedent had been set for that type of behavior with the black cop who happened to kill a white woman and got, 10, 15 years. So there had already been a precedent that had been set. And from what I've been able to gather over the years about the legal system, that usually when they have a precedent that's set, they kind of try to be within the realm of that. And I also wonder whether the strained relationships that seem to be bubbling to the surface between black and Asian people is going to be further exacerbated by this judge letting this white woman off for killing this young black man because the judge happened to be of Asian ancestry. You know, I mean, we look at the crazy situation that went with the woman that got murdered with a mentally ill guy who happened to be black, followed the young Asian woman who was from Jersey, Rutgers Finest, to her apartment and murdered her, you know, or any of the other attacks on Asian people that have been gone on over the past couple of years. Number have been by black people. But, I mean, notwithstanding the overall presence of Trump saying the Kung Flu virus and all that, fueling that type of fire for those people who engage in hate of other people just because would feel comfortable and emboldened to do that. But, you know, all of those things, like we said, this is a chess game. All of those things come into play. And for some reason, in Minneapolis, it keeps happening. They keep knocking brothers off. Wasn't Philando Castile from in Minneapolis too?
Yes, that's right.
What the fuck is going on in Minneapolis?
I know. Yeah.
About the choice of the judge, Ketanji Brown Jackson, brilliant. Okay, probably the leading candidate. Leandra Kruger, another brilliant woman, and J. Michelle Childs, three extraordinary candidates. And that's what I'm saying. These three are far superior to the three that just got in. So
that occupy stolen speech, you mean?
That's right, exactly. So it's at the point at which it's moot whether they are Republicans and Lindsey Graham and Mitchell, they want to be part of a bipartisan group that puts this woman in, fine. Show some true backbone. But I'm not trusting any of them at all, you know, because the point of which, if you can on one hand tell me that you want to see this change happen, and then you're going to back and support, your former president as a traitor who openly declares his love for Putin, okay? Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
What more do you want? You know, so I'm supposed to trust you, Lindsey Graham, Mitchell, and, I mean, here you got Scott, the other great senator from the great state of South Carolina, ponying up like a lawn jockey boy to his orange master, saying, I'll run with you. I'll be your Negro. Can you imagine that?
He's an embarrassment.
Oh, my God.
He is an embarrassment. He is the typical caricature of, you know, Stephen Fletchett, all those black comedians from the past. Whenever I hear him speak and I see him, you know, the manner, his manner, his gait, the way he presents himself.
He acquiesces.
I don't know.
He acquiesces to them. He acquiesces to them. Like, yes, boss. Yes, boss.
Right.
Yeah. There's an image I came across when Trump was in office. And it was, I guess he had a Republican somewhere. They were standing behind him. Might have been at the White House. And if you look at the images, something was wrong with the podium. Something like that. Or something fell. And Tim Scott was kind of in the front row. And all you see is everybody laughing. And Tim Scott bends down to pick up whatever. Or maybe he's trying to help with the podium. But everybody's laughing. And they're looking down, and they're looking down at the black man who's bending down to do whatever. And just the image of it, not like bending down, bending over, like I'm not suggesting the kind of prison jail, you know, that. But bending down to pick something up or like I said, to either pick up the podium. But it still was servant-esque, you know. The picture was second-class citizen-esque. You know,
yeah, it's a visual for us who are older. Sammy Davis Jr. hugging Ronald Reagan,
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon.
It wasn't as bad as that. It didn't even look bad. It looked worse than that.
Byron. Didn't look that bad. Oh my God, no.
Because it looked like Richard Nixon really, you know, they what you want about Sammy. Those people really genuinely liked Sammy.
You know, Sammy was something else, man. Kanye West of his era.
He paid seriously to get where he
was. Oh, yeah, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to allow you to do that to Sammy, man. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I reject that.
One of my heroes.
I reject that, sir, Sammy Davis.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't know. I went too far.
You better apologize.
He was ahead
of
think
Sammy.
About that embrace.
Listen, how many of us thought Sammy was fair? How many? And as we go out, brothers, we got a minute. We're going out. But how many of us, as we go, how many of us thought Sammy was crazy when he said he was Jewish? Because Sammy knew some shit that all of us other Negroes didn't really know. He knew his history.
Yeah.
And he knew how to use it.
Exactly.
He's Jewish.
He knew his history. So we got to go ahead and give the people your send-off, Brother Byron Saunders.
Oh, my goodness. My friend, God bless you all. You know, stay powerful and remember this. One man, one vote. We are the majority, so start acting like it.
There
power,
it is. Thank you very much.
And
Brother
love.
Peace. Brother Wayne Gilman, give the people your send-off.
Hey, keep the faith. That's all I got to say, baby. Keep the faith. Adam Clayton Powell.
It is. That's good enough. We'll talk to you again, Brother Wayne Gilman. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Kay's Son. This has been another time where we get to talk about what we want to talk about and issues that are important to us as a people. And that's what Wayne and my mom did and Byron did when they spoke truth to power. Education to the community. This is Biggie Smalls. Because sometimes you got to get gangster with his mother. You know what I'm saying. I'm out. K-Center Friends.